If you enjoy the content and point of view, please leave a favorable review on Stitcher, iTunes, or Blog Talk Radio. To have Shirley be your personal oral health coach, you can reach out to her via email, shirley@crosslinkradio.com.
Hello and welcome to Crosslink Radio. This is Shirley Gutkowski, your host of the only show that talks about health from the eye teeth on down. We have quite a lot of things to talk about today. It's a totally different topic, but it still has to do with health, right, starting just behind the pie hole, if you know what I mean. We have with us a guest who has a brand new book out. This is, I think today's the day we're recording is the day his book is being released onto the public. The book title is The Oxygen Advantage, and the author is Patrick McCowan. He is a practitioner in the Buteyko method of breath retraining or breathing retraining, which is a totally new concept to me. And I don't know, I've heard about this breathing technique before, but I never really realized how important it was to really think about your breathing and watch how you're and do what it is that is more natural than what we've kind of ended up being taught to believe. I met Patrick again at the AAMS conference on myofunctional science, and he really illuminated a couple of different aspects of this whole breathing thing that nobody, I don't think, really talks about. So without further ado, we're going to be talking with Patrick McCowan, who was educated at Trinity College in Dublin and was later accredited by the founder of the Buteyko method, the late Dr. Buteyko. From a very young age, Patrick suffered from asthma and relied on an array of medicines and inhalers until he discovered the Buteyko method at the age of 26. By applying the principles from Dr. Buteyko, Patrick experienced immediate relief from his asthmatic symptoms, a feat that over 20 years of medication had failed to accomplish. Learning to breathe through the mouth and reducing his breathing volume positively changed his life in so many ways. For the first time, Patrick's asthma was under control. His life-changing discovery motivated him to change his career in order to help children and adults who suffered from similar breathing problems. Following his time in Russia studying with Dr. Buteyko, Patrick has been teaching the Oxygen Advantage program in Australia, United States, and throughout Europe. He has penned 7 books, including 3 Amazon.com bestsellers, and has been invited to speak at dental and respiratory conferences throughout the world. Patrick's latest book is available on Amazon. It's called The Oxygen Advantage, and it's intent on improving sports performance with optimal breathing and stimulation of high altitude. Hi, Patrick.
Hi, Shirley. How are you? And thanks very much for inviting me to talk with you.
Oh, you're very welcome. This has been a topic that's been on my mind for a while, and I was happy to run into you again at the meeting this past week. So,
sure.
Kind of, let's go through some of these problems here. So it's breathing through the nose is the most important thing. And I think some of us realize that it is important, but it's way more important than what you think of first.
Yes, it's vitally important. It's vitally important for everybody, from a young child right up to a senior person. And the reason being is based on the medical physiology of the nose. Your nose performs certain functions in the body. And of course, when everybody thinks of the nose, the first functions they may think of is that the nose filters incoming air, which is correct. But it also sterilizes incoming air. And it's also a source of a gas called nitric oxide. So when you breathe through your nose, you carry nitric oxide into your lungs. And it passes into the blood where it helps open up the blood vessels. Nitric oxide also has a role in reversing high cholesterol and lowering high blood pressure. And also, when you breathe through your nose, you carry moisture with the incoming air into the lungs. And oxygen uptake takes place in the presence of moisture. So basically, people who breathe through their nose are healthier than people who breathe through their mouth. And that if oxygen is king, your uptake in the blood and also your delivery to the cells is better with nose breathing. And of
so
course,
there's,
you know,
so one second, there's like a physiological difference between air that's coming in through the nose as opposed to air that's coming in through the mouth, right? It
yes.
changes
no
at
question.
A molecular
yeah.
level, right? So explain a little bit more about the nitric oxide, because I don't know that many people understand what that is. It was,
sure.
I was looking through your book and you reminded me that it was called the molecule of the year in 1991, and now we don't hear about it at all.
Sure. For a long time, for decades, scientists were kind of dismissing nitric oxide because it's quite toxic outside of the human body. And it was difficult to envisage how can a gas that's toxic outside the human body play such an important role within it. And in the early 90s, or even the late 80s, a team of researchers discovered that it was a relaxant of the blood vessels, and that it plays a role in the signaling of the cardiovascular system. And one of those researchers is a Dr. Luis Ignaro, and he's director of pharmacology at UCLA. And he was awarded, along with two other people, the Nobel Prize for Medicine and Physiology in their discovery of the role of nitric oxide in the human body. Now, when I say nitric oxide, I'm not talking about nitrous oxide, and because sometimes people confuse it. Obviously, mm-hmm. nitrous oxide is a laughing gas. We're specifically talking about NO, or nitric oxide. And there were a small handful of papers written about it in the early 1990s, and it's estimated now there's about 100,000 papers written about the positive effects of this gas in the body. Now, it is produced inside the blood vessels, but the nose is also a significant source for the gas. And one director, he's professor of nitric oxide. That's actually his title.
Wow.
He's based at the Karolinska Institute in Sweden, which is a very well-known institute. It would be equivalent to the Mayo Clinic here. And he's written many papers, nasal nitric oxide in man, and also about the importance of breathing through the nose and breathing slowly. Because when you breathe softly, you carry a higher concentration of nitric oxide into the lungs and into the blood. And this is really, you know, that's one of the aspects of breathing through your nose. But if you breathe through your mouth, we tend to breathe using the upper chest. And upper chest breathing is more fight or flight. It's a more stress response. Nose breathing will tend to activate the diaphragm. Now, when we breathe using diaphragmatic breathing, we are taking a deeper breath, but the key is not to have a bigger breath.
Mm-hmm.
Good breathing is deep, it's diaphragmatic, it's through the nose, and it's paused on the exhale. So, but it's silent. It should be, it's, you know, if we look at somebody's breathing, healthy breathing, I cannot see it.
Mm-hmm.
Healthy breathing, I cannot hear it during rest. And conversely, if somebody comes into me and they come in with their mouth open and they're breathing through their mouth, or if I can see they're breathing quite easily, or if I can hear it, it's not a good sign. And, you know, addressing those dysfunctional breathing patterns can often be, you know, often offer that individual a tremendous improvement to their quality of life. Because human beings, we survive on food, we survive on water, and we survive on air. And everybody knows we must eat a certain amount of food each day. We can eat too much, we could eat too much, or we could eat too little. And water is the same. We must drink a certain amount of water each day. We could drink too much, but we could also drink too little. But air, nobody seems to know how much air to breathe. And air is vitally more important than either food or water. And also, our breathing is subject to change. And probably the biggest change of our breathing is stress.
How much are we supposed to breathe? Like, how much air do your lungs
breath.
Hold? And are you supposed to breathe, like, all the way down to the tippy ends of the lungs, or
sure.
what are the actual
the best
there?
The best person or animal to teach us how to breathe is a young baby.
And
we're talking about maybe 3 or 4 months old, or a cat, or a healthy animal. And when you watch their breathing, it's going to be rhythmic. It's going to be through the nose. A young
mm-hmm.
baby, I'm talking about, because at the age of 2, 3, 4, 5 months old, their windpipe goes directly from the back of the nose to the lungs, so they'll tend to nasal breathe. Yes, a baby's breathing is a little bit faster, but their breathing will be deep, it will be diaphragmatic, it will be regular, and it will be through the nose. And a cat or other healthy animal will have the same breathing. And talking about animals, of all species on Earth, I was trying to find out which ones can actually mouth breathe, and I could only locate three. One is, of course, a dog, you know, because it uses its tongue to regulate body temperature.
Mm-hmm.
So mouth breathing serves a purpose to cool down the dog. But the others were diving birds, penguins and pelicans and gannets, that they breathe through their mouths habitually. Now, can you imagine, of all species on Earth, I had great difficulty in trying to find species who breed with an open mouth.
Yeah.
And those that do breed with an open mouth are sick. For example, if a farm animal, a cow is standing in a field with its mouth open and its neck extended, the farmer is going to call a vet because the farmer knows from experience that the animal is sick. And the same goes for a sheep or a horse or a donkey or any animal. And in the wild, you know, if you were looking at a photo or a video of a cheetah in full flight, their mouth is closed. So
mm-hmm.
human beings, we got it drastically wrong. You know, we've picked up habits. And not only that, the importance of nose breathing has been around for a long, long time. I've came across texts going back 115 years ago,
oh boy,
talking about the benefits of breathing through the nose. You have an American painter here, Mr. George Catlin is his name. And I think in 1870, which is even further than that, he wrote a book called Shut Your Mouth and Save Your Life.
Really?
And he did. And he documented that. And you'll get the book free on the internet. He documented that children who were breathing through their mouths were sicker than children who were breathing through their noses. So more recently, Dr. Morris Cottle, he's renowned for starting the American Rhinological Society, or basically ENT Society.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that the human nose is responsible for 30 functions in the human body. And this is back in the 1970s.
Wow.
So we didn't learn. We didn't learn
it
from it.
It didn't stick,
and
yeah.
The most basic information has been pretty much ignored. And it's been ignored to the detriment and the health of millions of children and adults.
Well, there's a bunch of features that kind of go around in that with respect to orthodontics and all that, true, too, and our
yes.
diet and epigenetics, which we're not
yes.
going to talk about today because we could just talk for hours and hours.
We could.
There's just so many functions there. And those functions are the reason that our mouth is open and how we've gotten so used to seeing people breathing with their mouth open. But our normal
yes.
lung volume, or the normal amount of passive respiratory air, is about 5 liters. Is that right?
That's correct. So it's 5 liters. Now, it was 5 liters was considered normal in 2002. And when I read more up-to-date texts, it seems what's considered normal is changing, in that it's increasing. But that shouldn't be the case. Like, modern life is, of course, changing. And
mm-hmm.
even in the last 10, 15 years, you know, we are subject to competitive pressures, you know, different foods, different environments, as you say, and they all influence our breathing. But really the key is our breathing should be light and undetectable, and ideally maybe 10 breaths per minute, 10 to 12 breaths per minute, but very light breaths and calm breaths and quiet breaths and in and out through the nose. So that's, you know, the basic functioning of the human body. That would be considered normal breathing, and normal breathing is normal health. So this all changes. Our breathing does change, and our breathing gradually changes, but just as it gradually changes to become bigger, we can also influence it.
Mm-hmm.
to retrain it or re-educate our breathing to bring it back towards normal. And usually the most common precursor of mouth breathing is, of course, nasal obstruction. So a child or adult, they may have an allergy, they may have
right.
hay fever, or, for example, they may just have chronic rhinitis. Now,
Or
And
they
you
may
hold
have
your
been a
breath.
thumbsucker and they have a high, narrow arch and there's no nice wide floor to the lower sinuses.
Yes, either a thumb sucker or, is again, there's going to be an influence of genetics in that the baby is going to inherit, like my own child. Unfortunately, since day one, she's had narrow jaws.
You could tell right
And
away,
she's
huh?
copied her dad. Always, we knew it straight away. But that's why we're undertaking palatal expansion, because, of course, we know the benefits of getting a wider palate for nasal breathing. But in saying that, there are still exercises that are very effective at decongesting the nose. And you can decongest a person's nose in 5 to 6 minutes just by having them hold their breath. But they will take a small breath in through their nose, a small breath out through their nose. They hold their breath, and the person just walks around while holding their breath. And they walk around until they feel a medium to strong air shortage. And with that, they resume nasal breathing. They wait a minute and they try it again. So it's a very simple exercise. Breathe in through your nose, breathe out through your nose, pinch your nose, and walk a number of paces and continue walking with your breath held until you feel a medium to strong need for air. When you need to release, let go of your nose and breathe in through your nose. Now, if you try that 6 times, your nose should be free. And if your nose isn't decongested on the sixth time, then you've got a structural issue. So we don't need antihistamines. This can be very sort sort this can be sorted very, very easily and quickly by breathing exercises. And all we're doing is we're tapping into the body's own natural resources. How does it work? We don't know. But it may be due to nasal nitric oxide. As you hold your breath, nitric oxide pools inside the nasal cavity and is reducing inflammation inside the nasal cavity.
So there are some like fractions that talk about taking a deep breath to settle down or
Yes.
let all your breath out, or where did all of that come from, this deep breathing and this
I
idea
have no idea.
that we have to
But it's
breathe all the way down and let it all the way out and keep blowing until it's
Yes.
out. And it's kind of
Yes.
crazy when you think about what you're saying, how we got so
Yes.
trapped in this. And I find that even myself, when I'm doing exerting kind of exercise, I know it's hard to believe I do that, but on occasion, and I just don't know
Sure.
what to do with my breathing. I try to take a deep breath and that doesn't help. I try to let it all out. That doesn't help. I tried to hold it. I've tried everything except the right thing, obviously. So when you're doing exerting
Sure.
things like running or cycling or something like that, what is the right way to do it for an athlete or a pseudo athlete?
Okay, how you breathe during physical exercise is determined by how you breathe during rest. So if we have dysfunctional breathing patterns during rest, they're automatically going to translate into increased breathlessness during physical exercise. So we practice breathing exercises during rest to reset the respiratory center, and then we have less breathlessness during physical exercise. Now, the main thing with physical exercise is do physical exercise, but allow your nose to dictate the intensity of your pace. So only go as fast or as far as you can while maintaining nasal breathing. And if you feel that you have to open your mouth, slow down. Let your nose dictate how fast you go. And in time, of course, when you switch first from mouth to nose breathing during physical exercise, you're going to feel a little bit more of an air shortage, but it's a matter of persisting with it. We have to remember that when we breathe through the nose, the oxygen uptake is better and the oxygen delivery is better. When you breathe through the nose, we'll have less lactic acid. We'll have better recovery. We also will have less cooling and dehydration of the airways, especially with, say, for instance, people who are susceptible to asthma, and not even asthma, but asthma type tendencies. They may not necessarily be diagnosed with asthma, but they may find that their airways get tight after physical exercise. Breathing through the nose is the key to that, and the more we do it, the easier it gets. But it is a little bit of practice.
One of the doctors who was speaking at the Academy of Applied Myofunctional Sciences meeting was marathon runner, and he said too that he used to breathe with his mouth open during those runs.
Yes.
And he, yes. What was, you probably influenced him to breathe with his mouth closed, and he found that he was able to have higher stamina with his mouth closed.
Yes. Yes. I, you know, I missed his talk. It's, I assume it's Dr. Bill Hang.
Yes.
And I wrote about him in the book because we met quite a few years ago. And we were talking about that, and he's an avid runner, you know. He's run many marathons, and he achieves pretty good times with that. And what I wrote in the book was, when he first started switching from mouth to nose breathing, he said, you know, it was kind of feeling that he was holding him back a little bit. But he persisted with it. And usually within 6 to 8 weeks, your fitness surpasses what it was previously.
Really?
But like, even from the point of view of, you're not going to be dehydrated. If you're going around with your mouth open, you know, you're going to be losing a lot of moisture.
Mm-hmm.
And your nose holds on to moisture in the body. So for physical exercise, I think it's going to be a game changer that we can improve athletic performance healthier. You know, we can achieve a better level of fitness, but also we're not going to run the risk, or at least we're going to reduce the risk of overtraining and reduce the risk of, you know, even from a cardiovascular point of view, if we're breathing too hard, blood vessels are constricting. And the heart is a muscle, and the heart needs its own supply of blood flow and oxygen. So is there a link between overbreathing, excessive breathing, pushing the body too hard, and say, for example, cardiac arrest? I wrote about that.
Yeah,
and
you
I was
did.
Just trying to find, you know, I put a chapter in about asthma. I put a chapter in about craniofacial changes. You're very aware of the effects of mouth breathing and the shape of the face.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have a child that's hanging with their mouth hanging open for, you know, the formative years of life, say until the age of 12, usually by then, you know, most of their facial structure has developed, at least the shape of it has developed.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, in some kids, their jaws, the lower jaw, the maxilla and the mandible, both jaws, will be set back and set back on their airways. So they have smaller airways. They're not going to perform physical exercise. So an athlete is not developed from the age of 10 to the age of 25, but an athlete is developed from day one right through to 25. And we have to consider the first 5 to 10 years of life are just as important in the life of an athlete as the later years when the athlete is training. And this seldom gets attention. But not just that. Of course, if the jaws are set back, it increases the risk of obstructive sleep apnea because the airways are too small. And then it's a vicious circle because with smaller jaws, smaller mouth, smaller upper palate, we have a greater tendency to mouth breathe. So now we're taking this cold, dry, unfiltered air into the lungs. So it will contribute to inflammation of the upper airway. And you can think of that this way. I know, you know, many of your listeners will probably remember they went out to a party one night and they had a few drinks of alcohol and they came back with their mouth open. They slept with their mouth open and they snored all night because, of course, they were more relaxed. And the next thing is they woke up in the morning and their throat was raw. And that was from breathing an excessive volume of air. And the same thing is we see many individuals, they wake up with sore throats in the morning because cold, dry air coming into the upper airways, contributing to the inflammation and in turn, contributing to obstructive sleep apnea. So nose breathing is for 24 hours per day.
Wow. So that's a real trick, though, I can imagine. I know when I lay down to go to sleep, I usually lay on my right side and my mouth pops open and there's no air exchanged unless my mouth is open. I don't know why that would be. But I have my mouth closed all day long. And then when I lay down, it pops open and I don't know what to do about that.
Yes, it can happen. And we use various helps to get the mouth closed, including one which it seems a little bit off the wall is we use a slight paper tape. You know, we have a piece of paper tape and we put it maybe from top to bottom on the top and bottom lip, just to keep the lips together, or just to remind the mouth to be closed.
Mm-hmm.
Some people may use the strap from the CPAP machine. But there's other ways, you know, little straps, etc. The only thing is, if you are using a strap, we have to make sure that it's not pulling the lower jaw back even further. So the tape works pretty well. And I've encouraged many, many thousands of people to breathe through their nose at night using a piece of paper tape. Because unless the mouth is closed, you know, we could have perfectly good breathing, or at least reasonably good breathing during the day, and we're losing it at night.
So I did do that. I tried it. Well, I gave a real great effort. It was one night in a row. But
sure.
I pulled it off in the middle of the night somewhere.
Sure.
I found it laying on the carpet
yes.
in the morning. So
sure.
I keep trying.
Oh, of course. You must have been afraid of losing your romance life when you gave it up after one night. But we always encourage, you know. It was the mouth closed, the snoring is reduced, sleep apnea is significantly reduced. If we have mouth open and there's a risk of sleep apnea, you know, sleep apnea unfortunately goes hand in hand, or often goes hand in hand with mouth breathing. So it is about getting the mouth closed. And I found a difference. When I first switched from mouth to nose breathing during sleep, I was about 23, 24 years of age. It was the first night that I woke up feeling that I had a decent night's sleep, because for the previous 15 years, I was always waking up tired and I was falling asleep in school. My concentration was dreadful and nobody was picking up on the simple fact that maybe I was breathing through my mouth.
Yeah.
You know, and discovering that completely changed my life. It completely changed my life. Before that, I was in and out of a doctor's surgery getting asthma medication. I had rhinitis, I had asthma, I had sleep disorder, breathing, I had poor concentration. They all go hand in hand. Not that everybody gets them, but, you know, if you have dysfunctional breathing patterns or if you've got nasal congestion, it's not just a runny nose. It can also affect sleep and breathing, etc. So it was a game changer for me. And I'm sure there's many, many listeners that they wake up in the morning and they just feel that they haven't had a decent night's sleep. But they've learned to live with it.
Right.
Well, if that's you, what I suggest is ask yourself, when you wake up in the morning, do you wake up with a dry mouth? Do you find yourself having to go to the bathroom a couple of times during your sleep? For example, do you bring water to bed with you? So if you're breathing through your mouth, your quality of sleep isn't going to be as good as it should be.
Well, we're about out of time, and I want to make sure that people know how to get your book, and I know that it's on Amazon. Do you have a website also where they can get more information and stuff?
Yes, we have a website. It's called oxygenadvantage.com.
Oh, that's easy enough. That's the title of your book too, right? The Oxygen Advantage.
That's correct.
And that's awesome. And are you going to be doing any book signings coming up?
I do. I speak at the AAOSH. It's in Dallas, and I'll be signing books there. And also then I travel to Calgary for the AAGO, and I do a book signing there. So it's really great. It's you know, since I've discovered this work, and it's great to have and attend meetings whereby you can have anything from 300 to 500 or more healthcare professionals all talking about the importance of nose breathing. Because addressing it has no side effects and can offer significant improvements to quality of life for both children and for adults. So I'd like to say thanks to yourself, Shirley, for putting this interview together, because it is about creating awareness and it is about getting the message out there.
Well, I appreciate you sharing your knowledge and extolling your passion across the globe here. To help people understand why mouth closed breathing is more than just a cosmetic thing, and it drives health. So thank you, Patrick McGowan, for your time today to talk with us about breathing and the Oxygen Advantage, your new book, available on Amazon. Have a great rest of the day, everybody.